Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, we just mentioned a couple of days ago how nobody's really getting into the presidential sweepstakes for the year 2012. But a couple of folks have decided to line up for some key Senate vacancies, including the former Virginia Senator George Allen, and a seat that is considered to be looking pretty good for Republicans, especially if Tim Kaine doesn't decide to get in. But even if he does, it could definitely be a seat that tilts Republican. But it's not just Virginia. It's not just North Dakota. Charlie Cook of the National Journal, hardly a rabid conservative partisan, had this to say in recent days about just how bleak the outlook is for Democrats in the next two cycles, largely because they did so well in the two cycles before 2010.
Democrats are going to have a very hard time holding on to the Senate. And then 2014 is actually pretty bad, too. They're 20 Democratic seats up and 13 Republican seats, as opposed to 23-10 this time. So you've got back-to-back really ugly, ugly years in the U.S. Senate for Democrats.
Not sure why the music for Mr. Rogers' Land of Make-Believe got into the National Journal video there, but Charlie Cook basically just pointing out a numbers game here, Jim. 23-10, the number of seats Democrats have to defend compared to Republicans in the next cycle. It's 20-13 after that, and both of those are obviously huge Democratic years where people won Senate seats where in a normal year they probably wouldn't have. So things are looking good given the fact that we're only either three seats and a vice president or four seats away from taking back the majority.
Greg, I'm guessing those chimes we heard is because this is all a dream sequence over at the National Republican Senatorial Committee. You know, the one thing I would note is that on paper, this is sort of a problem you want to have, because when you have a lot of seats to defend, it means you won a lot of seats 6 years earlier.
Right.
So on the one hand, we shouldn't be stunned to see Democrats. It's more interesting about where they are. And you look at this immediate coming cycle. By the way, there's a part of me that feels a little wary about looking too far down the road at 2014. We just don't know what the economy is going to be like. We don't know who the president's going to be. We don't know, will, God forbid, some terrorist blow something up. It's really kind of tough to figure. The only thing we know is which Senate seats are going to be open and maybe which incumbents will be running. But, you know, you can still see surprises in that category. I think a few years ago we would have expected Jim Webb to be running for reelection. Probably a lot of Democrats figured Kent Conrad would be running for reelection. So cycles have their own surprises. Having said that, this cycle, you know, the near future is looking pretty darn good for Republicans. There are a bunch of circumstances up in the Mountain West states. You look at the Montana seat against John Tester. You look at the North Dakota seat with Conrad's retirement. You've got the Missouri seat, Claire McCaskill. If Obama didn't win Missouri in 2008, it's kind of hard to see him winning in 2012. And that state has really kind of shifted red since then. And as I mentioned earlier, it's now an open seat race in Virginia. And I, as a Virginian, am finding it really interesting to watch Tim Kaine, the current head of the DNC, hem and haw and take his time about jumping into this race. Ever since the moment Jim Webb said he wasn't going to run for reelection, just the expectation was, all right, Tim Kaine used to be governor there. He'd be he's won a statewide race before, so let's nominate him. And Obama's made his sales pitch, and it hasn't happened yet. So kind of applying the what I call the frustrated girlfriend theory of political decision-making to Kaine, he's looking for a reason to not do it. Because if he really wanted to do it, he would have announced it almost immediately. So, you know, you look at that, there's definitely the circumstances are there for Republicans to take back the Senate. A lot of work to do, got to get some good candidates and got to, you know, have a very sharp argument against the Democrats in these cases. But look, if you're the NRSC, maybe you're hearing those chimes because it's feeling kind of dreamy to you.
On to the bad martini today. And surprisingly, this one, we can still have it sponsored by the Middle East, but we're not talking about the Middle East in this one, because one of the top targets for Democrats in the next Senate round of elections is Scott Brown in Massachusetts. He obviously won that special election against Martha Coakley, campaigning basically as the 41st vote against the president's health care plan, talking about the need to get fiscal discipline under control. Some folks, since his election, have been a little bit underwhelmed. Others say we've gotten about as good as we can expect from someone who wants to win re-election in Massachusetts. Here's Scott Brown on CNN over the weekend, giving other people a little bit of a heartburn about his attitude towards the current fight over the budget.
I know that in the Senate, everything's on the table, and I know that not only me, but all of my colleagues, we're ready to sit down and hammer it out so we can keep the country funded and then move on and tackle the other financial and fiscal issues that we have.
To his credit, Scott Brown did talk about the need to get the fiscal house in order, but his desire, it seems, above all else, is to keep the government functioning. And while the Republicans don't want to repeat what happened in 1994, 55. It seems that they're almost spooked by that. I'm encouraged by the fact that folks like Paul Ryan and other members of Congress saying, look, even this two-week extension is kind of a prorated version of what we passed in the House just a few weeks ago. It just seems to me, Jim, like they're really spooked by that, and it makes you wonder just how committed they are to doing what they may need to do to get our fiscal house back in order when Democrats clearly won't play ball.
Greg, allow me to play devil's advocate, and I'm sure to the ears of many listeners, it's probably a very literal devil's advocate, the devilish rhinos. Scott Brown, obviously, look, won under very unique circumstances against an extraordinarily flawed Democratic candidate. It was a great win, but I think we can say, having watched almost every Republican in Massachusetts not succeed in November 2010, disturbingly rare circumstances for a Massachusetts Republican. Considering that he's going to be running in 2012 with Obama at the top of the ticket, how brave would you like him to be?
Well, basically somebody who's going to do what he said he would do is all I'm really expecting him to do. I know on some issues he's not going to toe the party line. We've clearly seen that in some other areas. But if you're not going to do what you said you're going to do and certainly roll up your sleeves and make an honest attempt to tackle the biggest fiscal challenge we've faced in generations, then not sure what good he's doing there.
Can you say, I do not want to see a government shutdown and be a good fiscal conservative?
Sure.
All right. Just make sure we can put that out there.
Absolutely.
I think for a lot of Republicans, the political risk of a government shutdown is overstated, and I think they really can dig in. I think Scott Brown might be at almost a semi-unique set of circumstances. He's almost a Joseph Gow beating William Jefferson in very unique set of circumstances down in New Orleans. He just may not be in a circumstance where he can go, you know, the full Monty, to use a perhaps inappropriate metaphor, for you know, fighting for fiscal conservatism. I don't know how whether the Wisconsin approach will work in Massachusetts. He may just be in such, you know, tough circumstances that he's doomed anyway. And at that point, he should just, you know, go all in and let the chips fall where they may. But it's one of those things where if he's not towing the line on every particular issue, I'm willing to even let him get away with things I wouldn't let Snow or Collins get away with. That's how ominous the political outlook is for him, I suspect.
I understand that. What I think the larger concern is among some conservatives, and I guess myself included, is that Republicans, they pass their budget continuing resolution in the House. For the most part, we like it. Senate Democrats say no. And then instead of digging in and saying this is really what we want to do, or at least coming up with something pretty close to that, they go with this two-week resolution, which I guess is prorated, and I guess we can applaud that to some extent. But it appears that the only side doing any compromising here is on the right.
No, that's true. I when you put it that way, I can see the – at some point, Scott Brown has to be willing to say, look, this far and no further. We've got to have some sort of cuts. And if, you know, if Harry Reid wants a position to be, no, we cannot spend, you know, anything less than the level we are currently spending at, then that perhaps that is the hill worth dying on. I've been feeling, look at some of the poll numbers in Wisconsin and how they're not really jumping onto the, you know, Scott Walker bandwagon. And I kind of recognize that this is, if this were easy, it would have been done earlier. And perhaps this is one of those things where you have to say to hell with the polls. The right thing to do is reduce spending. And if it ends up costing me my seat, it costs me my seat. When Harry Reid is being that unreasonable that he effectively won't allow any cuts, then I think you got to say, all right, I'll call your bluff and let's fight this out in the public eye.
Very interesting. We will not let you leave today without another little tidbit on Wisconsin. That drama is still playing out. And we have highlighted from time to time over the past 2 to 3 weeks that this whole drama has been unfolding in Wisconsin. The really class actions of the protesters, those who have kicked and swatted at folks trying to video this. So we talked about the Tabitha Hale situation from FreedomWorks. That was actually here in Washington. The latest development is between two members of the state assembly and really the actions of one. Gordon Hintz is a Democrat member of the assembly from Oshkosh. Michelle Litchens is a pretty conservative Republican from generally that same area. Last week was apparently not a very good week for Mr. Hintz. First of all, there was a bust of a prostitution ring in Wisconsin, and lo and behold, he got caught up in all that. Then after one of the key test votes leading up to the final vote on approval of the Walker budget, this happened as described by WTMJ Radio, one of the big stations in Milwaukee.
After the vote to engross, he turns to a female conservative Republican who is also from the Oshkosh area, looks at her and says, "You are effing dead." He didn't say effing. He said the whole thing. He says to a female colleague, "You are effing dead."
Jim, I think we've documented pretty well over the past few weeks how the Tucson principle is dead and how Democrats really are complete hypocrites on this. And Republicans aren't perfect, but it's pretty clear that the actions over the past 2 to 3 weeks have pretty much gone in one direction here. This one takes the cake, though, since it's actual lawmakers involved here and a Democrat clearly becoming unhinged in what is obviously a horrible week for Mr. Hintz out of Oshkosh and a lot of people wondering why he's still in office.
You hear this complaint from conservatives all the time, and I think we almost get tired of making this argument that, in a way, the mainstream media isn't mainstream. Ace of Spades likes to use the phrase the make-believe media. And what's kind of frustrating is that we this is the sort of thing where it's, you know, you'll probably get some coverage over in Wisconsin, and maybe you'll see a brief of it. It's not like this will be completely and totally blackout from the media, although I noticed none of the network news did anything with this. But if the parties had been reversed, because this plays into this preconceived notion of most of the media elites that Republicans are these, you know, vile barbarians snorting and spitting and coming over the hill with axes like a bunch of, Cro-Magnon barbarians. If any Wisconsin Republican senator says anything rude to one of their colleagues, it'll turn into a national issue. And it'll be spotlighted, and we'll have discussion groups, and the Sunday shows will talk about it, and everyone will bewail the end of civility, et cetera, et cetera. When you really get down to it, is the Sarah Palin map more of a menace to Americans, or Wisconsin saying, you are bleeping dead? One seems like a direct threat. The other one is strictly on the level of transitive property metaphor of the idea that this somehow motivated the Tucson shooter. And we get some new example of this, you know, day in and day out, and it's maddening. And I kind of wish that you could do something to break through the mental cocoon of folks in the mainstream media. I'm not expecting them to be righties. I'm not expecting them to come all the way and say and to cover the news the way I do or you do or anything. I just want them to see both sides and not just be complete, have the blinders on for obnoxious behavior when it comes from their preferred party.
Objectivity is all we're asking for here. If you're going to cover the story in one way, obviously cover the examples of it going the other way. We talked yesterday how David Gregory did bring that up to some extent on Meet the Press, so kudos to him. Jim, frustrating on some level, but it looks like Governor Walker's still holding firm, so that's definitely a good way to consider all this as we move forward. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Greg, I need more martinis. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.